Welcome to Help and Hope, a podcast of CCEF.
Thanks for joining us again this week. My name is Andrew Ray, and I'm joined by my co-host,
Barbara Lane.
And we have two very interesting people with us, and they are
Winston Smith
and David Powelson.
Well, actually, we're the other way around. But Winston's kind of a cut up, so.
And David's really not that interesting.
That's right. Unless you see him surfing on a kayak.
Wow.
That gets interesting.
I would like to see that.
I would too.
He's pretty good at it. You've been doing it since when?
1973. Yes. We had the first kayaks, seagoing kayaks out in Hawaii. And my dad and I, over a period of 4 summers, went around the island in 10 to 12 mile segments.
That's interesting, Winston, right?
That is interesting. I retract my former statement.
In fact, it was so interesting. We, at one point, we saw that there was a zone off Pearl Harbor you weren't supposed to go through, but we figured we're small boats, so no one would notice. Well, pretty soon, rifle fire starts dropping, literally within 20 feet of us. And this guard spots us, and he looked like he was having 6 heart attacks simultaneously.
That sounds like something that would happen in North Carolina, not Hawaii. I'm expecting a shot canoeing in North Carolina.
Here's our personal question this week is, what is one of your favorite hobbies?
Well, I mean, I'm just identifying myself officially as a nerd. I really enjoy playing chess.
I don't enjoy playing chess.
Sometimes I kayak while I'm playing chess.
I never play chess while I kayak.
I actually like playing chess online on the internet. The internet's so great. So there's this website that I play chess on. And anybody can challenge me if they want to.
And that way there's always someone to play.
Yeah, for all around the world. I mean, right now I'm playing a guy from somewhere in Eastern Europe and somebody from South America. I mean, it's really cool. And you can kind of chat while you're doing it.
And do they rank you? Missions?
Yeah. Yeah, the website itself has its own kind of ranking system.
Are you in the top 10?
I am in the top 10%.
You are?
That's very
nice.
Cool.
Nice. Yeah. Darn, I'm not playing you in chess then. That would be embarrassing.
Bring it.
I'll point out a nerdy hobby to go follow in Winston's path here. I love reading good novels and good history. And one of the things, I actually would connect it in a way with something about counseling, because I think counselors tend to be very prosaic and pragmatic, and there are things about history and literature that just widen your world. And I'm currently reading it was a Nobel Prize winner in 61 called The Bridge Over the Drina, written by a Bosnian author. And and then I'm also reading a biography of Samuel Johnson. And just so stimulating in terms of understanding people and reflections on my own life. What it means to be a Christian, and so forth.
And World War II is a big theme for you, right? So if things don't work out as a counselor, a U.S. history teacher may be in the future.
Like one of my co-hosts here, a history teacher, is always a possibility.
In fact, we just found out that David almost took a bullet at Pearl Harbor.
Wow.
That's very significant.
How old does that make him exactly?
95.
Yeah. Are you the oldest faculty member here now?
I'm the oldest employee faculty member. Yes, I started in 1980, just past my 30th anniversary at CCEF. So I'm one of those rare people who's a lifer in their job. And CCEF has a lot of those. Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
No, that's true.
A lot of people hang out here, stay here for a long time.
Says a lot for CCEF. Mm-hmm.
I like to read People magazine. No nerdy hobby. That's why I need to work with people like David and Winston.
I think I have read People magazine a handful of occasions, and the first 4 pages are my favorite part because they're just those little bits of what the stars are doing.
Oh, they're the best.
Like that?
Yeah. You should see the app on the iPad.
I just read it for the articles. I don't like the pictures. I just like the articles.
The serious articles.
Yeah.
The ones on philosophy.
Yeah. It's kind of meaningful. Cultural engagement is what it's all about for me.
Right. Now, surely we have a serious question here.
We do. And we're going to discuss bipolar this week, and the Ask the Counselor question goes like this. I have a client that has been diagnosed by a psychologist as bipolar, as she uses the quote-unquote, well, I'm bipolar, so I can't help it, unquote excuse. She has been depressed and suicidal. She has also been hospitalized a few times. She is new to biblical counseling and claims to be a believer. Any suggestion?
Such a difficult struggle.
And I don't know what, it's hard to know kind of exactly what this person means and what they're referring to when they say I'm bipolar so I can't help it. But I think in general, we ought to be very careful when we say those kinds of things to ourselves or anybody else, because it's actually, it's a message of hopelessness. It's a message of bondage and slavery. And I don't know, I don't think anybody, secular, believer, unbeliever, wants to say to someone who's diagnosed as bipolar or anything else, there's nothing that can be done. You have no responsibilities here. There's nothing you can do differently. There's, you know, so I don't know. I mean, perhaps as a counselor, you know, I would, well, I want to understand more carefully what in what context this person is saying that. But I want to, I kind of want to, you know, I want to find out what that means to them and help them be alert to really messages of hopelessness in that.
Yeah, I'll agree with what Winston said and kick the ball forward another step. It one of the things that I have found really helpful to people who wear some sort of diagnostic label is to, we can start there. I mean, that's those labels describe certain configurations of typical behavior, feeling, thought, pattern, and so forth. But to try to move it into a more concretely human kind of self-description, like, you know, this woman, it would be a huge step forward if she could say, I am a person, I am in the image of God, I struggle with suffering, I struggle with sin, and I have a tendency to have very intense highs and lows emotionally. Mm-hmm. Now, that's all bipolar means, but simply by conceiving of it concretely in terms of I'm a person prone to intense highs and lows, that actually does something huge, because it takes her out of the category of the sort of hopelessness that Winston spoke of, and the sense that she has this thing that is, like diabetes, is completely outside of who you are as a human being. It's an affliction, it comes at you. There's a few things you can do to moderate it or manage it, occasionally even cure it medically. But you have who you are as a person is not implicated in the fact that you have diabetes. And whereas bipolar is very different, because whatever tendencies there are, genetically, whatever hardships there have been situationally, and there's a lot of unknowns about that, she's still a person who brings what makes her tick. One of the first people I ever counseled here at CCF, going back almost 30 years now, was a man that had had three hospitalizations, super high, bounce off the wall mania, and then crash lower than pond scum for months, and after wrecking his life and his relationships and during the high. And it was interesting that as we sought to normalize his experience, he, like this person, he claimed to be a believer. He had some Christian faith. It was fairly undeveloped, but seemed genuine. But he was a man that struggled with selfishness, and he struggled with laziness, and he struggled with wanting his way in relationships. And it was interesting that those human factors were on the table in some way or other as very decisive turning points in each of his breakdowns. And I'm not saying by that there's nothing biological or nothing situational. You know, those there may well be things, but there's always that human factor that tangles in there as final cause, as the most fundamental thing. And that's hugely hope-giving, because if there's something about you that God can meet and transform, you can learn to live well, or at least better, even within some pretty tough problems.
I think it's interesting how, I mean, we have to be very careful with the way we use labels and how they function, because, you know, it's one of the aims of the mental health movement was to talk about these sorts of problems as diseases, in part to remove shame. And in your effort to reduce shame, you can inadvertently reduce personhood. You can lose personhood, so that I guess I'm just a bundle of biochemical activity, and I'm not a person anymore who gets to make choices or respond. Kind of what you're saying, David, that personhood gets lost in some of this language.
And it's almost slavery language.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm bipolar, so I can't help it. It's like, I am tied to chains, so I can't do anything. And what David and you, Winston, are saying is, it's actually part of the biology is part of the picture, but you're still a person.
I'm more than that.
And much more than that.
I've seen the language tend to scare people away sometimes, too, once their friend or their family member gets labeled with that. I was wondering if you had any encouragement for folks who are, trying to just not necessarily be the counselor, but walk alongside and deal with the difficulties of the highs and the lows.
I think there's two things to avoid. One, you certainly don't want to just blow off the life difficulties and say, well, if you just shape up, or if you just do this or just do that, everything would be fine. That moralistic kind of approach is never helpful. And on the other side is to simply be lulled into taking it as the totality of reality for that person. And what both those things do is lose the potential to deal honestly, lovingly, humbly, boldly with a person. If they're out of line, to be able to talk candidly about that. When there's good things in a person's life, to be able to notice those, enjoy those. That's a little, probably a footnote in our overall discussion, but another deleterious effect of labels is it tends to erase all the strengths that people have. You are defined by the label, and the fact is, I've known quite a few people that had worn the label bipolar at one time or other, and I have found, for example, that they're often people that have a delightful sense of humor. Now, they don't have much of a sense of humor when they're nutty on the high or pond sludge on the low, but there's often a vivaciousness, a vibrancy that just gets a little bit out of whack at times.
So, that's very helpful.
And as well as many other strengths, people have skills, they have relational assets that they bring to the table, and labels do tend to put a damper on humanizing your interpersonal relationships as well as the way you conceive of your own identity.
Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
And lady. Guys and lady.
Thank you for joining us. For more information about CCEF and its resources, visit us on the web at ccef.org.